and welcome to this episode 60 of Crashcast. I'm Richard, and as always, Ross Alexander.
Hello there.
I don't want to start this podcast with a rant. Actually, I do. I quite enjoy a rant, and I'm going to rant away. Because a couple of weeks ago, if you listen to, I think it was like episode 58 or something, I went off the rails a bit at the news that there was going to be a PlayStation 4.5. Now, the rumours, they're still in rumour stage, but the more and more we hear, the more it sounds like this is very much the reality. Is it going under the name PlayStation 4 Neo or PlayStation Neo, whatever
it is?
Yeah,
the Neo. They've had the Morpheus, and then there's the Neo.
The Neo. It's terrible. I mean, come on. Naming conventions from the year 2000, it seems odd. But the more I hear about it, the more I think it's everything I was scared that it would be. Essentially, the last thing I heard was that, you know, okay, you'll get one disc, for instance, but you'll get essentially two SKUs on the same disc. So you'll get, like, you know, if you put it into the system, you'll get, like, the PS4 version and the PS4.5 version on the same disc. That is exactly what I didn't want. That is horrible, because that immediately makes me think, that's PC gaming. I know it's simpler because, you know, it's all on the one disc.
I'll be honest. I'd say it's actually worse than PC gaming. Like, so this is actually worse than I thought that they were going to do.
Let's stress, we don't know this for certain, but this is where the rumors are pointing towards at the moment.
Yeah.
There's something to back this up based on what's, you know, based on pretty decent hearsay, shall we say.
I thought that it was going to be basically components that you can, like, USB plug into your computer that are going to make it run better. Something that isn't a brand new system.
Kind of like with the N64.
N64. Like with the expansions.
That I could have dealt with. This, when I was ranting, this is what I was ranting towards. This is what I had in my head. We were going to get a new console, and it was going to be the more powerful version. And the people who have gone out, like the 40 million people who have gone out and bought the first, you know, the first version, the early adopters, which essentially I and so many others are, were the ones getting dicked. And it is, let's be clear, getting dicked. Because I'm going to sit there, if I put in a game into my PlayStation 4, and I'll see it when it comes out, I'll say, I know I'm playing the shit version of this game. And it drives me, like, I was already annoyed about the fact that I had to change my hard drive. And don't get me wrong, that's relatively easy. But again, I buy consoles for convenience.
Yeah.
And this, after 2 years, I fear for the way the market is going, if this comes to fruition and it's successful. Like, this really isn't the way I... You know, the thing I like about, and I've obviously said this before, is the fact that I buy a console and it's good for, what, 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah. This is... I mean, the rumours I've seen are pretty strange. It would suggest that, essentially, it is a brand new console. I don't know. I'm kind of in two minds about it, but it isn't like the PC market, where the PC market will say, okay, both of these PCs will play the same game.
Yeah.
But because you've spent £100 more on your graphics card, you can play it at a faster frame rate.
Yeah.
This is something that's essentially... I don't see why they need to do it like this.
I don't see why they need to do it at all. This is the very definition of potentially shooting themselves in the foot. Sony could not be doing any better. They must be doing better than their wildest dreams in terms of the PS4. What is it, 40 million units sold? That is a huge... I mean, it's outpacing... And while I don't think it'll outsell it in the long run, it's outpacing the PlayStation 2 at the moment. You know, the fastest-selling console of all time. And I just think, you know, the PlayStation has done such a good job over the past few years of getting the gaming community, of getting the hardcore on their side.
Yeah.
And this feels like, you know, after all that hard work to get them on their side, just feels like shitting in their face, for lack of a better term. I mean, that sounds like a strong term, but I honestly think I find it bewildering that they would make this move. Unless, of course, they think, oh, well, Microsoft's going to make this move, so we're just going to make it first. We want to be at the cutting edge. How integral this is to the ongoing potential success of PlayStation VR, I don't know. I don't like the sound of it. And again, you know, you think to, like, even, like I said, when I'm playing a game and I'll be worried, oh, am I playing the shit version of this game? Say this year's E3 comes up. And they're showing you these videos of Uncharted 5. Just take any game. And you're like, oh my god, that looks amazing. In your head, you'll be like, am I looking at the PlayStation Neo version? Like, is that going to look like that on my bog-standard PlayStation 4?
Let's face it, though. Most of the time, you're watching it on a very high-powered PC rig.
Yeah, I know.
Which is something that's permeated the games industry. Penny Arcade coined the term bull shots.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's enough of a problem as is. But that's just muddying the waters even further, yeah. I think. And I don't know. And the thing is, at the start, I have no doubt the differences will be relatively minor. And
yeah,
it might
be pretty negligible.
Frame rates. But yeah. I tell you what, if that proves to be a success, that gap will widen really, really quickly. As technology advances and the original PlayStation 4 gets left behind, those differences between, you know, the PS4 version and the Neo version will become more and more pronounced. Up to, you know, like the recent Hyrule Legends on the 3DS.
Obviously, the 3DS Plus.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the new 3DS, you know, on the traditional 3DS, you can't even play that game in 3D. And yeah. It chugs along horribly. But the point is, it kind of gets away with that because it's only one or two games on the 3DS.
Yeah.
This will be all the games, you know, all the, you know, AAA stuff, the, you know. And
I struggle to imagine it being to such an extent.
Well, that's the thing. I'm worried. I don't think it'll be that extent out of the gate, but I'm worried about where this is going. Because, as I said, you know, you'll get developers who want to be on the bleeding edge. And the rumours are, and again, rumours, reports, etc., that the power difference is a lot more pronounced than people initially thought.
Yeah.
And as PC gaming advances, you know, it's already well ahead of consoles, as is, you get these developers who want to be on the bleeding edge, and that gap between the Neo and the PS4 will become wider and wider and wider. It'll be incremental, but it will 100% happen.
Well, this is something that I guess maybe got cut out when you burst the blood vessel and we lost half of the audio.
Oh, I lost
the last
shit
time
that
we had this discussion.
I'm trying to keep my fucking shit together. it's tricky.
Are you just stroking the cat next to you, being like, "Yeah, I'm calm.
Trying not to strangle the cat. That's about it."
But yeah, it's. My issue, the way I was able to defend this move was that the games are still playable. They are still enjoyable games. If it goes down the same route as Hyrule Warriors, where the game is unplayable, that's a totally different story. Where I'm absolutely with you. Where if you are essentially trying to get an Xbox One game to run on an Xbox 360, of course that's not going to work. My idea about the disparity is very different to what we are speculating about here.
Totally.
Which is where a modern PS4 is incapable of running a game that is supposedly for a PS4, say 3 years from now. That's indefensible, and I totally agree with you in that.
They're
not going to do that.
Yeah, that's the more extreme example of it. But even less than that, again, I just don't like the concept of it at all. I just do not like the fact that Sony, who are doing so incredibly well off the back of, you know, a loyal fan base who have brought them this success by, you know...
Loyal fan base. They have brought people across. Like,
yeah, they
have
absolutely,
crossed that river.
Absolutely have. And, you know, to get the, you know, quote-unquote hardcore gamers on board...
did it make you wince to say that?
It absolutely does. I hate it. But to get them, you know, on board, and then to do the... I don't know, it just seems strange. And as I said, they're already talking about, oh, you know, there might never be a PlayStation 5. Basically, all they're saying is they're trying to turn it into a mobile phone market where you'll keep getting these upgrades. And it's like... I get it. It's like a mobile phone. You can play a new game on an iPhone 4, but you know what? It looks like shit on an iPhone 4 and it doesn't run well. And that's what we're going to end up with. And basically, they're just trying to ease us into a world where they can get us to buy a new console once every 2 years. And once we get to that point, I'm like, well, why don't I just get a fucking PC? Because the whole point of a PC is that, you know, to stay on the bleeding edge, you need to upgrade, you know, you need to make a financial commitment once every year, once every 2 years to really stay at the front, you know, top of the game. And if they're going to do that with consoles, then what the hell's the point? Like, that's the thing. I've always divided that line. This is why I was never interested in PC gaming. This is why I've always been a console gamer. And now, they're essentially turning it into PC gaming.
Well,
I know there are differences. I know I might be being overly dramatic.
PC gaming is modular. And that's the difference. And I think that the console market, I don't think it would be as adversely hurt from a bit of modularity. I really don't think that. If people can still play the games on the console that they got at the start of the generation, if they can still play the games that came out at the end of the generation on that console,
yeah.
I don't think anyone is getting screwed over. There are, of course, people, and you mentioned the hardcore audience, the people who are going to have the best console.
Yeah.
Like, the ones that, who are that's obviously the ones who are going to be losing out.
Well, that's the problem. The people that, all right, there's going to be a whole number of people, like you say, the casual crowd, who won't even care. They'll be like, oh, it's a slightly better frame rate, slightly better graphics. Like, it makes no difference to them. They're still getting
my Skylanders is going to look exactly the same. Yeah,
Madden is going to basically look the same. They don't really give a shit. The fact of the matter is, this change is hurting the most committed players. The players who went out and bought the PlayStation early doors. The ones who do care about the fact that, you know, they want it to be in 60 frames per second. They want the best frame rate. They're the ones who are going to pay. And again, like, sure.
But on the other side of it, they're getting a better gaming experience earlier that they wouldn't be able to get without switching to a PC.
Yeah, the thing is as well, like, and I you know, I'm even only thinking from convenience sake. Like, the fact of the matter is, I'm an adult. I can, like, if a Neo comes out tomorrow, I could theoretically go out and buy a Neo tomorrow. Like, if I, you know, I have the money in my account, I could go out and I could drop £400 on a Neo. Mm-hmm. I don't want to because, firstly, like I said, I don't like the fact that it's removing the convenience of console gaming. It's already bad enough we have all these goddamn downloads and stuff. That's already a pain in the ass. I can't just put in a game and play it. It's like I put it in, it's like, fuck, there's another update.
Install it, yeah.
Exactly. But then there's going to be so many kids, like, you know, imagine, like, I keep thinking to the fact that, say I was like 12, 13 years old, and I got a PlayStation 4 for Christmas. And now, and like, you know, I was a hardcore gamer when I was 12, 13, you know, I was into the industry just like I am now. And I was told, oh, well, there's going to be a fucking Neo out this year. I can't afford to drop another £400. So I can't, it's out of the question. I can't be at the bleeding edge anymore. And I don't know, I just think the backlash is going to be very loud, and I think it's going to be vitriolic largely. As you said, I don't think the casual crowd are okay, but the casual crowd aren't the ones who will be making the noise online. I think, and don't get me wrong, maybe Sony, they've been great so far this generation. Maybe they'll deal with it with a deft hand, and maybe it won't be as bad as I think, and it'll come out and it all makes sense. But based on everything I've heard thus far, it just sounds like Sony are just waiting to shoot themselves in the foot, and it just seems absolutely unnecessary.
I mean, the way the rumors are kind of swirling about it, the way that we've discussed how it's essentially going to be a brand new console instead of like modular upgrades. What it seems to me like is it's basically a brand new console with backwards compatibility. That's what it sounds like.
Which makes my skin crawl. I agree with you. If this was like a modular, like something I could attach to my pre-existing PlayStation 4, I'd feel so much better about it.
Because that puts everyone in the same boat. Everyone who, if you get a PS4 at launch, like if you your PS4 2 years ago,
or if you get
your PS4 when these upgrades come out, you're at exactly the same starting point.
Exactly, exactly. And that would make me feel, and maybe it is just,
and that was how I felt I could defend it, because that is PC gaming in a nutshell. Like, if you're willing to spend the extra money to get the extra thing, that's what you get.
And even that, like, I wouldn't be over the moon about that, but I would accept it, and I would, like, there's no two ways about it, I'd buy the add-on. But as you say, it makes it a level playing field, whether you're an early adopter or not. Everybody has to buy. Even if you buy like a boxed version where, you know, the PS4 plus the add-on, you're paying that little bit extra. And you take the fact that if, as an early adopter, you pay more anyway. It's just that idea. You say it's a great explanation you just put ahead there. It's basically a new console with backwards compatibility, which is just, it's just the worst. It's just the worst. I really don't like it. But we won't keep going on about this, because obviously we've already done an episode and now an episode and a half on it. But speaking about shooting yourself in the foot, I haven't actually had time to read the story here, but I've just seen the headlines to suggest that on Amazon now, you can't buy certain games unless you're an Amazon Prime member. Can that possibly be fucking true?
I saw that and I looked at it and I was like, no, surely not. Maybe it's... Is that like a streaming service? Are they offering a streaming service or something?
Supposedly... You can't buy it unless, like, certain games, unless you have Amazon Prime. Let me see. It says, no FIFA 16, GTA 5, Minecraft, or Shadow of Mordor for you. It says you'll supposedly be restricted to certain games unless you're an Amazon Prime member. I haven't read the full story, so I'm not going to go too far into it. And I certainly don't want to, you know, live on a podcast, read the story, and then kind of reiterate it. That's not good radio. But... I mean, if that's true, and it sounds like it is, surely that is another sign of madness. You know, a company who are obviously doing incredibly well, and somebody just being greedy for those few extra pennies.
Well, they kind of have a monopoly at this point.
People will immediately just fuck off and not come back.
Yeah, you know, that does strike me as odd that they would do something like that. It smacks of something going on behind the scenes beyond greed.
Well, yeah, it's a combination.
It's very short-sighted
and stupidity. It's again to bring me back to the PlayStation 4 thing. It's as if these companies don't learn. It's like the Xbox One didn't learn by the mistakes of the PlayStation 3, and now it looks like the PlayStation 4 isn't learning from the mistakes of the Xbox One. Like, when the Xbox One came out, I actually wrote some relatively positive articles about the launch, because what they were saying made sense. It was all, again, it was quite PC oriented, but it was looking towards the future, and a lot of the stuff they said then is basically in place now. But they didn't deal with the messaging well, and they forced it on people and said, well, this is just the way it's going to be. And yeah, sure, maybe this is the way console gaming is going to go in the future, but for Sony just to drop it out of the fucking blue in the middle of this console generation, this isn't the way to do it. And you know, again, you're in a position of power as the PlayStation 4 is now. Maybe they do think, oh well, you know, we can just do what we want. But, you know, as was proved by the PlayStation 3, as was proved by the Xbox One,
so you get taken down a peg.
If you fuck the consumers over, they will turn their back, because this isn't a monopoly. This isn't like Madden or anything like that. There is another option waiting in the wings. And if Sony fuck it up, people will go to Xbox. And if Xbox fuck up, they'll go to Sony. And fuck, who knows? Maybe Nintendo will come out and deliver something, you know, impressive. Who knows? It might fucking happen.
But,
I don't know, man. It's just sometimes the decision, obviously they're, you know, driven by money, and all companies are, but surely there must be somebody there saying, like, Jesus Christ, this sounds like a bad idea. This sounds like a, you know, a nightmare waiting to happen, but it seems to happen over and over again, so, you know, what am I to do? Okay, so we'll pass it. Other news this week. I don't know why I pronounced it news. I guess the big one for me was the Red Dead Redemption 2 map leak.
Yeah.
As to what's on that map, I don't give a toss. I haven't even looked at it. It's just that kind of vague confirmation that Red Dead Redemption 2 is coming. Because, you know, that the more time passes, the more I'm convinced that that is one of my favorite video games of all time. Like, all time. Like, I'm... like, that's... it's definitely in the top 10. It's arguably in the top 5. I mean, that's how much I love that game. It's so far ahead of, like, Grand Theft Auto for me. Just everything about Red Dead Redemption, I just absolutely loved. And it arguably had what I think might still be the greatest DLC of all time.
Oh, the Undead Nightmare.
Yeah, it's just the best. Just the best DLC ever. Just to take the pre-existing world, to turn the game on its head, while still managing to keep the tone. It's like, don't get me wrong, the stuff they do in Call of Duty with the zombies, it's really good, but it still feels like a separate game. I mean, you know, right down to in the menus, it's under a separate mode, menu. Whereas somehow they made that Undead Redemption work within the confines of that universe without it sounding ridiculous. They've just upped the B-movie quotient slightly. And, I mean, everything about, right down to John Marston, I absolutely adore that game, and I can't think of many games that I'd want a sequel to more than Red Dead Redemption. I think that's the same for a lot of people.
I don't think you're in the minority there.
No, absolutely not.
When it comes to Rockstar games, I think, you know, maybe some people want a new table tennis.
But, I loved it. That was a really good game.
Once the fan base gets a hold of a GTA game, they're probably spending at least a couple of years making mods for it. So I think a new Red Dead, I think we're better placed than ever to have a Red Dead, because we haven't really had a Western game in this generation yet. So I think it would be a good time to release one.
Absolutely.
People really want one.
Yeah, and it's been a few years since even Grand Theft Auto 6. I mean, you know, we think, sorry, five. we think about it because it was kind of re-released on Xbox One and PlayStation 4. But in terms of when it was initially released, I mean, what was that now? Like three years ago, maybe? It was two, three years ago? It's a fair while.
Yeah, it has been a while.
But Red Dead Redemption, you know, that's a distant memory almost now since the first time I played that. But I mean, I assume it'll be a prequel, just because, and not so much because of, you know, spoiler alert. John Marston dies at the end, but more so because, wasn't it
cracking ending?
It was just a fantastic. And to have that ending and then to keep going with it was just, god damn, that game is so good. And you know, everyone remembers this bit, but
crossing
the river, going into that is just, that is one of the moments in gaming. And that is one of the, like, the moments, like, obviously when people think about the last generation and they think of video games growing up, they think a lot about the indie games, like you know, Braid and stuff like that, and Limbo. Yeah. But I'd say that was one of those big moments for the video games, when, you know, you've got this big AAA experience, and one of its most memorable moments was one of its quietest. You know, you weren't shooting anything.
Yeah, you're not shooting anyone. You're just riding your horse.
Just riding your horse, and it's just the music playing, and the scenery's changing. And, you know, I don't think it's one of those things either where some things kind of grow in stature, where, you know, people talk about it and it's like, oh yeah, I remember that. That bit was kind of cool. I think everybody knew it was special when they were playing it.
It's just perfect game direction.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. It is absolutely. And, you know, I thought they did a better job with that in terms of capturing the spirit of the source material. As I said, like with Grand Theft Auto,
the whole Sergio Leone soundtrack,
they absolutely nailed it.
Pulled it all together.
Some of the humour in Grand Theft Auto a little bit, to be honest, I'm not the biggest fan of it, but the tone of that video game, as I said, that includes the DLC, was absolutely perfect. So, I mean, just the fact that, I guess, when's it going to be revealed? Who knows? Because we wouldn't expect them. They never go to E3, do they? Rockstar.
Well, they're kind of above all that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Rockstar, did you see that one of their senior guys is suing them?
Yeah, for $150 million.
Yeah, in royalty fees. I know quite a few guys from Rockstar.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they're still waiting on their bonus checks from GTA 5.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, you remember how successful that game was.
Yeah, it seems ridiculous.
In 3 days, I think.
It seems ridiculous that anybody would be waiting for money on Grand Theft Auto 5, anyone who worked on it. Because that's the thing, people hear that and they're like, oh my god, you know.
It seems like the Housers are just total arseholes.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, it's easy to like see, when you see one person like, oh, he's suing for $150 million, that seems ridiculous. But it's like, if you're owed $150 million, you won $150 million. You know, and I'm not saying that's the case. You know, it's always hard to judge these things for being an outsider, but yeah, it is strange that you think people wouldn't be getting paid for a video game that broke pretty much every record in the book. You know, and certainly in terms of making money, but yeah, strange stuff. What else is there? Other big news this week: Borderlands 3 is being officially announced as Gearbox's next game.
Yeah,
no
shocker.
Real surprise, and not sure if I care. I'll be interested to see it, but neither of us are massive Borderlands fans, I think it's fair to say.
If I can play it with a good group of people, maybe.
Yeah.
Tales from the Borderlands really made me want to spend more time in that world. I don't know if I spoke about how much fun I had with Tales of the Borderlands.
Yeah, I like, the general consensus seems to be that is so much better than anyone was
expecting.
It's
probably my favourite Telltale game. Like,
which, considering
more so than Walking Dead.
Yeah, yeah. Well, considering how highly Walking Dead is thought of, it's amazing how many people say the same thing. And I'm thinking, maybe if I go into this, maybe it'll convince me. I've actually, because it was on sale this week, I think it's like £15-16 online, I keep umming and ahhing about buying the Handsome Collection.
All right,
you know,
yeah.
Which includes Borderlands 2 and the pre-sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Because I keep hearing these things, I'm like, well, I did like it when I played it, and maybe if I kind of go back into it, it'll just kind of grab me or something.
I've actually been doing that with another game that I guess we'll get round to when we talk about what we've been playing. But there's something about trying to force yourself to like a game. In fact, we spoke about this with The Witcher, and I'm pretty sure you've spoken about it with regards to Bethesda games as well.
Sometimes it's just not going to... Although
it's a false economy you're creating for yourself. When you have to push yourself to enjoy a game. Because you can acknowledge that something is great.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But not necessarily enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which is exactly, for me, as we mentioned before, that Skyrim, Bethesda games, that is that for me. I can appreciate, I understand why people love them. It's not like I'm bewildered when you tell me you've spent 100 hours in Fallout. I get it. It's just not for me. The thing is, every so often it does happen. To me, the one that stood out for me, and it's a strange game because I know it's not the most popular, but it was Too Human. Remember the Silicon Knights game for the Xbox 360? I remember I played a demo of that, And I was like, this is the worst.
Yeah, and with the five-minute Valkyrie Ascendant sequences every time you die.
And I deleted it, and I was like, that's just terrible. And for some odd reason, something, and this was, what, like 8-9 years ago, but something just kind of kept chipping away at me. I was like, did I give that game a fair go? Did I? And like a week later, for some reason, because I had to re-download it, because, you know, I deleted it, because I was so convinced I hated the game. And I played it again, and I don't know what happened the second time, but I love that game, and I ended up going out and buying it, and I put so many hours into Too Human, and it's one of those games where I literally didn't understand the vitriol. Like, I know the Valkyrie thing was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I love that game. It was like a kind of console-friendly Diablo, and I know Diablo has since come out on console.
I think you are in the minority in that thing. Because it was a third-person action game, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it had that similar control scheme to Diablo in so much that you just kind of push the right thumbstick towards enemies, and you just kind of auto-attack.
Yeah.
But it was all built around loot, and I loved the universe. I love that kind of cyber Norse mythology thing. Oh, yeah,
That was cool. That was what drew me to it.
Yeah, yeah. And I know it wasn't a perfect game, but as you say, like, every so often just something just clicks for you, and that was one of those games where, for one reason or another, when I think of The Last Generation, that game just sticks in my head.
We should have had this in last week's topic.
No, you really should have, yeah. Well, I guess it works in this week's to a certain degree, because the last bit of news I've got is, I guess, the end of an era to a certain degree. The Xbox 360 is now officially ceasing production.
Yeah.
And it's like weird looking back at the 360. I'm looking at it right in front of me. I got the Xbox 360 Slim, which I still think is one of the best looking consoles of all time.
I have my R2-D2
which
one.
Is an even better looking version of one of the best looking consoles of all time. That is amongst... Your R2-D2 version of the Xbox 360 has got to be one of the most gorgeous consoles ever. If you're a Star Wars fan, obviously, like with the sound effects, and it's just the design of the console. And even now...
And the little C3PO controller.
It's sitting next to my PlayStation 4, and out of the two, I'd prefer the 360 Slim. I just think it looks nicer.
Mm-hmm. It is a gorgeous console.
Yeah, it is a really lovely console. But, I mean, you know, you look back on the 360, and, I mean, that's got to be in the conversation, personally, I think, for greatest console of all time. Which seems like hyperbole, but I honestly think it's in that kind of top three category.
I think it's the best. It had such a massive... you talk about the range of games that the PlayStation 2 had. So much of that was shovelware.
Absolutely.
And yeah, okay, some of the stuff on the Xbox Marketplace was crap, but the Xbox 360 Marketplace was probably the first console to really embrace digital downloads.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Because the PlayStation Store, arguably on the PS3, never really caught up. I did not like the PlayStation 3 layout.
I still don't think the PlayStation 4 store has caught up. I do not like the PlayStation 4 store.
The Marketplace, And the summer of arcade things that they used to do. There was such a plethora of games that came out for that console. From AAA all the way down to retro games that were given a new breath of life. Even things like Centipede and Space Invaders that actually played well and looked good and sounded good.
Yeah, yeah. And it had so many moments that the Xbox 360 had the kind of moments which I still don't think this generation's had. Like, you already mentioned Summer of Arcades. That felt like a massive deal when games like Limbo and Shadow Complex and Braid came to the console. That felt like a big deal, something new, exciting. When Oblivion came out, that felt like something... I know we had already had Morrowind before, but it felt like such a major jump.
Oblivion... The first time you step out of a cave in Oblivion is probably my first memory with my 360.
Well, I mean, it's bizarre because in the end, I wasn't hugely into that game for, you know, aforementioned reasons. Mm-hmm. But that's still one of my favourite memories from the 360 was when, at that point, I thought, well, I was going to love this game. But, you know, you go through the dungeon, but like you said, you step out that first time. You're like, holy shit, I can go wherever the hell I want. And it all looks like this. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, you might look back now and say, oh, it all looks a bit janky. But at the time, that looked absolutely cutting edge.
Yeah.
And it wasn't one of my... I mean, I got the 360 very early. And one of my favourite memories is how it got me into online gaming. And I don't think I've ever enjoyed an online game as much as I enjoyed Ghost Recon Advanced Warfare.
Oh, that's a good one. Tom Clancy really hit his stride with the 360 era.
Absolutely. Especially when I had friends over and we played split screen online.
I say that like he was involved.
He put his name on it. Tom Clancy, deep in development on Ghost Recon. But yeah, one of my favourite memories is that playing split screen against people online. And that, oh my God, that was so much fun. And you know, Gears of War just felt like a massive jump.
Gears of War, Rainbow Six.
I played a lot of
Vegas and Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare.
We were still at a time then when Japanese gaming still felt like a big deal. Like, Lost Planet felt like a massive deal when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that game. I loved Lost Planet, the first one.
I remember when Lost Odyssey.
Oh, I love that game.
Was it Lost Odyssey?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Kyan. When that came out, and it was like, it's so this is Final Fantasy. This is what Final Fantasy 11 through whatever had come out by that point should have 13. Been.
Well, yeah, it was before 13, but
yeah.
And I love, you know, I know a lot of people don't, but I love Final Fantasy 13, but I still wouldn't put it in the same league as Lost Odyssey. I would arguably put Lost Odyssey as my favorite JRPG of all time. That's how strongly I feel about that game. I just
It was great.
It hit at the right time for me. Mm-hmm. Again, at the time, it looked so cutting edge, and I was a massive fan of Sakaguchi's other game as well. Like, I know it was quite childish, but I love Blue Dragon as well.
I like Blue Dragon. It came out the same day as BioShock.
Yeah.
And I had to make the choice between the two, and I did go for BioShock at the time.
Yeah.
But I definitely came back around to Blue Dragon, and I loved that game.
Oh, I love it. I think one of the guys from
Deep Purple did the music, the boss fight music.
The boss fight music. That's what Bethan, whenever she sees a JRPG, she sings the theme music from the boss battles from Blue Dragon, because you just remember hearing them over and over again.
Yeah.
They were so bizarrely out of place. Mm-hmm. But there was, like, the character design was amazing. It looked fantastic. I mean, visually, that game actually holds up really well.
I mean, I do not like anime, and I don't like a lot of the tropes that came in that game, but the gameplay itself and the story were solid.
Oh, no, I really... It was weird, because actually, that was probably me at the height of my JRPGs in terms of playing JRPGs.
Like, yeah,
I was never more into a Final Fantasy than I was Final Fantasy 13, and even some of the more offhand, you know, kind of smaller ones, when they were, because remember, like, the 360, they were still really trying to push in Japan, and they were what was the one with, like, the moon was chained to the earth? What the hell was the name of it?
Was it Eternal Sonata?
No, I played that as well. That was very good, and again, that game is absolutely bonkers when you think about the themes. But yeah, it's strange. Like, again, I when I think of the 360, a console which did not do well in Japan at all, I think of JRPGs. And bizarrely, the 360 got all the best shoot 'em ups, as in, you know, traditionally Japanese shoot 'em ups. It got, you know, all those were ported to the 360. It was such a bizarre console with such a fantastic library of games. Yeah. And again, I still have it hooked up today, even though, you know, slowly but surely, all those games are popping up on my Xbox One dashboard.
I tell a slight lie about my first memory with my 360. That was like the one in Oblivion when you step out of the cave. That's my first memory of playing a game on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the first memory I have is getting it 2 days early, because I worked at GameStation.
Nice.
Getting it in my bag, sitting on the bus and cradling it like it was my newborn child.
Oh, you would when you were the new console.
I think I got Perfect Dark with it.
Well, that was the thing. I was actually going to bring that. My first memory of the 360 was actually a slightly disappointing one, because I bought three games with it when I bought it a few months after launch. But I got it with Ghost Recon. I got it with Project
Gotham. Was Ghost Recon a release title, or did you get it a bit later?
I got it a few months down the line. I literally got it, I think, a week after Ghost Recon came out.
Right, okay.
And I remember I went to Choices Video Store, of all places, which has since closed down, obviously. Mm. But the console came with Ghost Recon, Project Gotham Racing, and now that, again, is another fine memory, because Project Gotham Racing 3 was one of my favourite racing games of all time.
They've never really landed with me, but yeah, I can appreciate that they're well made. I
absolutely love that game, in terms of getting that perfect balance between, you know, it's essentially what Forza Horizon is now.
Right,
even Forza Horizon doesn't quite capture the magic of Project Gotham, because I've been playing it on the Dreamcast, you know, when it used to be Gotham Street Racing.
Yeah.
So I've been with it for years, but that, Project Gotham 3, for me, was the pinnacle of that series. But the other game I got with it was Perfect Dark, and when I got the console, out of those three games, the first game I put in was Project Perfect Dark.
Yeah.
And I was so disappointed, and my friends were all over and we put it in, and I was just like, and I was trying to convince myself, I was like, oh no, it looks pretty good. Like, and I remember the guns looked ace.
It did look good, and it sounded good.
Okay, but and then
Oh, come on.
Then we played like a level and we're like, oh, this is shit.
Yeah. And plus, then, I was still playing on a CRT at the time.
Yeah, yeah, me too. That was one. I remember playing Dead Rising on a CRT and you couldn't see any of the fucking text. It was ridiculous. But yeah,
that sounds a bit right.
But once once I put on Ghost Recon and Project Gotham Racing, everyone was on board. And then it was like, oh my God, this really is the future. And then, of course, you realize you weren't actually seeing the future until you got a flat screen TV.
Yeah, I tell you what, that bit of grot at the start. When All Along the Watchtower plays as you're flying in the helicopter over the city.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I will never... Okay, that's probably now my first memory, because that bit was incredible.
Yeah, they did a similar thing when you were flying over Vegas in Rainbow Six Vegas.
I remember what music they were playing.
No, no, it wasn't so much the music. I just remember how awesome it looked when you were sitting in the helicopter with your team and you can just kind of look over the strip and stuff.
And you go down the ropes onto the roof. Yeah, that was very cool.
But yeah, 360, so many happy memories, and certainly up there with my favorite consoles.
Oh man, you know what else?
What's that?
To add, I guess, to the end of last week's discussion about games that you think are criminally overlooked,
mm-hmm.
Condemned was a release game for the Xbox 360, and I thought that was amazing.
That was and it had a really bizarre sequel where the protagonist turned into a drunken alcoholic asshole
with psychic powers.
Yeah. The sequel didn't quite work, but the first one, when you were essentially a detective, that was awesome.
That was really, really
cool. The Xbox 360, had a really awesome lineup, because even the stuff which got upscaled were all really good games, like Need for Speed Most Wanted was awesome.
I loved that.
That looked amazing on 360. Burnout, that was amazing. And then
obviously... Oh, 4 Revenge, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then obviously, I know they're not launch titles, but games which came out in that kind of, the first year, like you say, Oblivion, people like Fight Night, man, that absolutely.
Oh yeah, I hate boxing, but Fight Night was amazing.
Oh, I love boxing. What I would do for a new goddamn boxing game? I tried to play the new UFC. I just don't care. I just want to play it like a boxing game. Like,
I'm looking forward to Liam Pritchard's punch out.
Oh my God! Well, I do for new. The thing is, I don't want to complain about a new punch out because I can always go back to the Wii version, which is just the best remake, one of the best remakes ever. To take the NES game and essentially keep every. No, I'm not going to go into that. That's a whole other conversation. So easily swayed with these conversations.
I did derail us slightly.
That's quite all right. I'm easily derailed. That's pretty much it for the news this week, I think. So basically, what have you been playing this week? I suppose.
Yes.
Or watching or whatever.
So, I don't know if we spoke about Daredevil last week.
Yeah, I'm up to...
But I have finished that.
What do you think of the season as a whole?
Even better than season one.
Really?
Which I didn't think it was going to do.
Oh, awesome. I literally just got to the end of episode 5, and Elektra and him are about to kick some ass, and I was like... All right, I'm really enjoying this now. It's just because it's always so light at the moment, I feel like I have to watch it later, really late at night, otherwise, because we get so much light in my flat, and it's such a dark series that I don't know why it bothers me. My wife thinks I'm insane, but I just prefer to watch it when it's actually dark, so it's slowing down progress, but I'm essentially watching it like a normal TV show, essentially like an episode a week, but I'm going to get through it. But speaking of TV shows, actually... I'm finding myself not caring about Game of Thrones season 6. Is that weird?
I think a lot of people got kind of burnt out on season 5. Yeah. A lot of people said it was really boring, and I thought it was probably the best one I'd seen.
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah. It kind of had a build-up.
It was my least favorite by a long way.
Everything was so spread out, but at the end, I can't even remember what the episode's called, but... I guess spoilers for season 5 of Game of Thrones.
That's fair.
For a couple of minutes. So the episode where the White Walkers attack the Wildling village.
Is, in fairness, one of the best episodes.
It's incredible.
And that's the thing, when I think of season 5, I think of it as being two or three amazing episodes, and then a lot of people just in different places, and it's taking ages to get anywhere. I just remember that was the first season when I'd watch like a few episodes. I watched and I was like, oh, nothing really happened. I just didn't really care. Like before, I always felt like something was happening, but there were great moments in series 5. But I thought there was too much filler, and obviously too much. The problem was everyone's in different places, and it's trying to get them back together, and then. As great as that episode was, it ended so weakly with that tree elf bullshit.
Oh, with Bran.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but then you also have him escaping from White Walkers that are bursting through the through the snow.
Yeah.
That was something. That was really cool, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. It had its moments, but I don't know. Like, maybe there's something about that series, but I found myself just... I can't get all that excited about season six. Yeah. I'm sure, don't get me wrong, as soon as I start watching it, I'll be totally back on board.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to... I think that's... Is it tomorrow that the new season starts?
Is it tomorrow or Monday? It's very soon.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely not far away. I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen too much purely... Like, I don't even watch trailers, and I feel like I've seen too much. I know that Bran is going to be playing 47? A much bigger role. Yeah.
Yeah, Bran's about 47, I think, so that's definitely happens.
But, like, I know that... I know that the actors had a growth spurt, certainly.
No shit. But I mean, in fairness, he does. Yeah. It does at least look closer to being a man now, which seems odd, obviously, for Bran. But it's better than that kind of weird half creature he was. Which, in fairness, I went through where, like, for I'd say a year or two of my life, all the features on my face grew at different times.
Oh, yeah.
So my nose went first, then my chin went, then my ears went, and then finally my head caught up. So I've got a huge head now, but at least the individual parts fit on the head. But like Bran, I had that really rough couple of years where I turned... No, I'm not saying like I was an adorable child, but I was a cute enough kid, I suppose.
Yeah.
But for 2 years, like Bran, I was a fucking shitstorm.
My family has a similar curse. Both me and I think my brothers have had kind of the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, where everything grows in bits.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's unbelievable. And the penis is always last, isn't it? I'd like to stress...
I don't know what you're talking about.
It has caught up now and everything's all good, but no, I'm just kidding.
Grown up in scale with your massive head.
With my massive... Are we still talking about my penis? No, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think let's keep it vague.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's get back to video games. What have you been playing, sir?
So I finished the Fallout 4 main story. I hit 100 hours and finished the main story.
Hit 100 hours. Holy shit.
Yeah. So I'm going to step away from it for a little while. So people who are sick of me mentioning it on the podcast, namely you, maybe.
I can't fucking stand it.
I'm going to take a little break because I know that quite a big piece of DLC is coming.
Yeah.
And that'll hopefully be the nudge I need to kind of get me back into it later.
But you got
to
take a breather.
But yeah, like, I'm now looking forward to being a Wasteland Wanderer instead of being like, oh, I've got this quest to finish.
Yeah.
I guess I should do this. It's never, like, I don't know, even once you get 50 hours into a Bethesda game, you'll be doing a quest and suddenly something will pop up because you found the start of another quest, and it's like, oh, come on.
It's just never-ending. It's never-ending.
I mean, it's cool. It's part of why I love the games, because you can go into the middle of nowhere and find something awesome.
Yeah.
But it also, you feel like you're never really progressing, and you feel like you're drowning a little bit.
Yeah, like, don't get me wrong, there's a great, there's an element of world-building there. And as I said, it's not like I completely dislike those games. You know, I've mentioned before that I'm a massive fan of Dragon's Dogma.
Mm-hmm.
But there can be too much of a good thing. And sometimes it's just, you know, you're trying to get on with a quest and you're getting all these things thrown at you. And the problem is with the majority of us gamers is that we are, you know, we find it very hard to not be complete. We're all completionists at heart. Yeah. And you keep hearing all these questions, like, you can't just happily ignore them. You know, even if you do ignore them, it still annoys you, the fact that you had to ignore them. So
it still makes me feel, I can't even describe it, but I feel uncomfortable when I see that I've completed a quest in a certain way that immediately fails a bunch of other quests. It's normally when you make a decision which faction to choose, and it's like, right, okay, well, you can't do these ones. See these ones that you were working on? Mm-hmm. They're off the table now. You can't do them because you made this decision, and now you've got to live with it, you dick. You know those orphans that you were looking forward to saving? No, they're all dead now.
They're all fucking dead, dick.
See, when you go back there, it's just a school bus full of skeletons.
Yeah, it's just dead kids everywhere. Fallout 4, Dead Kids Edition.
Dead Kids Edition.
Obviously we're making light of it, but it does...
It comes in a human skull.
Yeah, it does bug me, these things, when I play a game. And, I accept it as part of the game, but as you say, it's just...
That's how they get you to play through it again.
You want to be able to just get on with what you're doing sometimes.
Yeah.
It's just, you're throwing more work at me here. This is ridiculous. I need a breather. But well, with that out the way, at least for the time being, have you had a chance to pick up anything else?
Yeah, so this is the game that I'm probably going to get some ire for this, but why do people like Dark Souls so much? Like, I picked it up again last weekend. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've played maybe 3.5-4 hours of it. I've rung the bell at the top. Like, you, I know you've played Dark Souls. And
I haven't played Dark Souls 3 yet, but...
You haven't played 3 yet? No. Yeah. I'm still just talking about the first one.
Oh, yeah, okay. You've played in the first one, sorry.
Yeah, because I've played... This is my third attempt at getting on board with Dark Souls.
Oh, so Dark Souls to you is essentially what, like, Fallout 3 and, you know... Skyrim is to me. You keep trying to enjoy it, but it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, but in fairness, I understand completely people who say they fucking hate Dark Souls. And I completely disagree. Like, I hate people online who are like, if you're like, I don't enjoy Dark Souls, and they call you a pussy. It's like, no, that's not how it fucking works. Yeah. And by the way, we grew up in the fucking 80s when all video games were absolutely nailed, so you can immediately suck a dick, Sunshine.
Yeah.
But there's something about a game which is stretched out over, what, like 30 hours? And just getting your ass whooped all the time. And yeah, I'm sure there are some people out there who are fucking awesome and they complete it with a guitar, with their dick, whatever, I don't care. But I'm a normal person with a normal amount of time in my fucking life. And and this is coming from someone who enjoys Dark Souls and certainly enjoyed Bloodborne. But there are some points where I'm just like, what the fuck am I doing with this?
I think the speed runs for Dark Souls 3 after like a week got down. Yeah, I think after a week it was down to 90 minutes. And I'm not surprised it's come down further.
A year from now, you'll have a dude playing it blindfolded with his butt cheeks. And he'll be completing it under an hour without getting hit. Like, I don't know how many fucking idiot savants are out there.
That's some amazing sphincter control he's got going on there, though. So fair play to him.
How many video game Rain Men are out there? It's just unbelievable. I'm like, how do people have the time to find and do these things? And don't get me wrong, I'm not belittling them, because they are amazing.
They are
so amazing, but how much, how committed do you have to be? Unless they're just consummately talented. But it can't be that many people who are just amazing at video games. They've got to be committed to it. And these people just are. It's bizarre.
Well, it's the whole lifestyle. You know, you play the game, you play it really well, and then you spend the rest of your time going online and telling other people, commenting on YouTube videos, being like, GG, noob.
Yeah, it's weird.
That's like the PG version of what they're actually saying.
But some people do that. Like, you know, they just get into that one game and they're just like, I'm going to be amazing. I've never had that mentality. I've always been, you know, there are many fruits, as it were.
Like, Oblivion was like that for me. For about a year.
Yeah, it's crazy. But like you said, you're struggling to get into Dark Souls by the sounds of things.
Yeah. So I've rung the first bell. That's how far I had gotten previously. When you beat the gargoyles on the roof of the church, and then you ring the bell. That's how far I had gotten last time. I was like, I really still don't think I'm enjoying this.
Yeah.
But then when you look into it, like, if you look into online... People, you obviously, and this is where it does annoy me, Dark Souls fans are some of the most venomous, like, they're passionate.
There's a difference between passion and being an ass juice.
It's because, it's a hard game means because I know how to play it, I am a better gamer than you. So it's really hard to get a good read on whether it's okay to use guides or like look things up on the internet.
Because
people, you know how hyperbole is so common throughout these communities where they'll say, oh no, if you've used a guide, you've spoiled the game for yourself. You know, people will say that. They'll be like, if you haven't figured it out yourself, you're not playing the game right.
And it's nonsense. It's person to person. Yeah. I mean, you know, it might be for someone. That might well be true for someone.
Yeah.
But it's not true for everyone.
Because, you know, I understand that discovery and the excitement of being like, wait, this tactic works. This is how I beat him.
I totally
understand that is really exciting.
Yeah. And
don't have time for that.
No. And some people like playing with guides right from the off. They like that hand holding aspect, and that's up to them. I'm actually somewhere in the middle, and so much I say I'm playing, obviously most recently for me was Bloodborne.
Yeah.
I do like to try and beat it without a guide. I do try and like to figure out for myself, but I don't have the time or the patience just to keep hitting my head against a brick wall. Yeah. I am willing to admit if I die 2, 3, 4 times and I'm not getting anywhere, I'm like, fuck this, I'm going to look into it. I think, you know, I got, 60-70% of the way through Bloodborne. See, I say I fought, 5 boss battles. I say for 2 of them, I looked up how to beat them. Because eventually, I'm just like, oh, I cannot be dealing with this. Because it's not just immediately replaying the boss battle. It's going back, getting more vials.
That's exactly my problem.
Getting back to
it's
where you
the
started.
Grind. It is not enjoyable. It's like if someone's playing Final Fantasy VII, most of their experience was spent running around in a circle trying to catch chocobos.
Yeah.
Which is why I've only ever gotten the gold chocobo once.
Yeah.
Because I remembered how unpleasant that was.
But then, there is the other side of that argument, which again, I completely agree with to a certain degree, is that while it can drive you nuts sometimes, when you do finally beat
the
that boss battle, when so much is on the line, and you beat that boss battle with like your last inch of energy. I mean, I have audibly hollered and whooped, or whooped and hollered.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, I'm not very good at hollering or whooping if I'm doing it the wrong way. But, you know, I was so excited. There are those moments of, like you say, it is incredibly rewarding when you do beat a boss battle, when there is that genuine risk on the line, when you just know, it's like, God, if this guy gets the next hit on me, I've got to go back, I've got to get the vials, I've got to grind, I've got to get back to the boss, he'll probably fucking kill me again.
Yep.
And when you do kill him, it feels amazing. But as you said, I've only got so much time. My patience only goes so far. And
It makes it really easy to put the game down, I think. If you've got a bunch of souls that you've been holding on to, which I've learned is a bad idea, don't hoard souls because you will end up losing them.
Yeah.
But
well, again,
if you find yourself going backwards, it's very easy to put that game down. Because if you just get angry, that's how the game beats you. Because you're like, oh, I just want to get through this. And then you get sloppy, you get a bit lazy. And then that's how you die. That's how you die before you even get to the boss.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it is that kind of game where you can just get killed anyway if you let down your guard for a second. And it brings it back to that point. While that game certainly, or that series as it were, certainly won't be for some people, and I totally understand it. It's like maybe more so than any other game. You've got to play it the way you want to play. Don't play it like how anyone fucking online tells you how to play it. It's like if you enjoy it more by using a guide when you need to, absolutely do that. And how often you use that guide and when you use that guide will be different person to person. Just, you know, the fact of the matter is, and I've only got better at it in recent years, if you're not enjoying something, don't play it. We've talked about it already in this episode, and I'm willing to give things a go.
I do enjoy the moment-to-moment gameplay. Like, I totally get why people love how the game feels to play.
And it looks amazing.
That combat, it reminded me a lot of Ninja Gaiden, actually.
Yeah, well, it reminds me, like it's a more kind of hardcore version of like Castlevania. Especially Bloodborne is still, for me, the highest point. I know it's not essentially the same series, but it's in the same I like playing more aggressively, and above all else, that gothic art style is
Dark Souls is beautiful as well. Like, I've been taking moments to smell the daisies,
absolutely. It is the kind of game
rotten
again,
on fire daisies.
Those daisies are totally on fire.
Also, the daisies will eat you.
They will totally eat your face.
They're slightly corrosive.
So they're carnivorous daisies that are also on fire, but they look gorgeous. Oh, they look so pretty. And those games really do. The thing is those moments when you kind of stop, as you say, to kind of smell the roses, and as you do, you get stabbed in the back. You're like, oh, motherfucker.
Yeah.
But it's sometimes it's hard to justify playing those games, and it's probably the reason I haven't played Dark Souls 3. I know there's something to be said for being, especially a game like Dark Souls 3, being part of the conversation when it comes out, but I'm just not in the right state of mind at the moment. As I said, it sounds weird, but like the Daredevil argument, it's too bright outside. It's sunny, you know, it's light here, especially up in Scotland.
You're not the first person I've heard say that it feels like a winter game.
Well, absolutely feels like a winter game.
Yeah, I know what you mean by that. I'm like that with big RPGs, like fantasy RPGs, I feel like that.
Well, I'm having that issue at the moment as well with, I recently bought Quantum Break for Xbox One.
Oh yeah.
And I'm thoroughly enjoying that, but there's something to do with the setting and the TV, the way the TV show is integrated. It feels like something I should be playing at nighttime when it's dark. And I tried to play it when I came home from work one day, and it was too bright, and there was a bit of glare on the TV, and I was like, no, not enjoying this. So like last night, I stayed up until like 1:30 playing it.
Right. Okay.
And by the way, that game is really good.
Okay.
I get it. It's not perfect, and it's not like I'm nearly halfway through it. it's not as memorable as Alan Wake, and as you know, and anyone who's listened to this podcast,
yeah, like, you love Alan Wake. You love you some Alan Wake.
Oh, I love Alan Wake. Like, that is amongst, again, my favorite games, certainly of the last generation. This game is really, really good. It doesn't quite have the magic of Alan Wake, but absolutely worth playing. And I was surprised how much I like the integration of the TV show. It's a little bit, like, you know, the budget's okay, but
how long are episodes? Is it literally like you'll play an hour of game and you get a half hour of episode?
No, I'd say like the acts probably take a little over, like, I guess it's different per act, and obviously I haven't finished it yet, but I was playing act 2 yesterday and it must have taken me like 2 hours or so, and then the episode's like 20 minutes.
Okay, that's, yeah, that sounds about and right. That sounds like a nice breakdown.
Oh, absolutely. For me, it's, because I was concerned when I heard about, oh, it's like, oh, what, I'm going to watch a TV show as well. But for me, it feels like a nice break. Like, I've just played, you know, 20 minutes of a pretty, you know, intense third-person experience. And then I guess, like, oh, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to watch the TV show for a little bit. And then, oh, whether I go back to the game and play the next actor. It just seems like a nice break for me. I play an act, I watch an episode, and that's my evening. It's like, okay, that's done. And I might not play the next act until next week. You know, it depends if I've got the time. But what I've played of it so far, yeah, really enjoyed it. And looks amazing. And I'm very, like, what really sells it as well is the story. I'm into the story, the whole time travel element. And again, you know, like anything else, it helps that the performances are very solid. But yeah.
I mean, with a cast like that, you've kind of got to have it. Yeah.
But it's one of those games, like, for me, it's a return to the kind of game, like, it's the perfect game for me right now. Like, even if, like, remove the TV show aspect, it's like, my complaints at the moment is, like, everything's online, or everything's indie, or more specifically, everything's huge open world games, and they're taking, like, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours to complete. And I'm just like, I want a AAA experience which I can finish in, like, a week. You know, this is exactly what I wanted. It's like, this game, like, yeah, sure, there are loads of indie games, but I want that AAA experience right now. Like, I'm looking for that big flash game which says, oh, look, this is why you bought a PlayStation 4, this is why you bought an Xbox One, and I can see the finish line. It's, you know, like I said, I still, as much as I love Metal Gear Solid, I haven't finished it. This is the exact, for me, like, I'd happily have every game be like this, like, you know, 8 to 10 hours long. Where I can see the finish line. And I know it's different for different people, but for me in this part, you know, time of my life, eight to 10 hours is absolutely ideal. And that's why I'm looking forward to Uncharted 4, because that's going to be a similar story. You know, it's,
that game looks so good. It does. Like, visually, it looks amazing. Did we speak about Ratchet and Clank?
No, we didn't. And it's one of those games where it feels like it's gone under my radar, but everyone else is going mad for it.
It looks gorgeous.
It really does look amazing.
I loved Ratchet and Clank on the PS3.
I didn't dislike it actively, but I was never really a fan of the series, bizarrely. Okay. Despite the fact that I like platformers. But
it's the weapons. I love the weapons. Like, they've always been good looking games with really great character design.
Yeah, yeah.
They're really funny. It is Insomniac, yeah. They're really funny games, and that's what always kind of kept me on the hook. Like, Jack and Daxter never really bit with me because it all felt a little bit too dry.
Old-faced, yeah, and I didn't like the character design on that either.
Whereas Ratchet and Clank is funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's one character that's a little bit like an evil Zap Brannigan.
Yeah. I know.
That always makes me laugh. It's pretty funny.
Well, it's weird because despite the fact that I heard about how much everyone supposedly loves this game, it still wasn't really clicking for me. But then on Games with Gold, Sunset Overdrive came out. One second, please. As always, we need to have this brief break while I let the goddamn cat into the room, because it's driving me insane. Break. One second.
Okay.
Stupid ass cat. you better have something good. Get the hell out of my way and be quiet.
Well, like he's dragging a sandwich across the floor.
I said be quiet.
Oh, sorry.
What did I say about the quiet? One second. So unprofessional. Okay, so the cat's in, and hopefully the cat will be quiet now. I apologise, but my God,
we could edit this out, but it serves to highlight the tone of the podcast.
I've just got this stupid cat scratching on the door. I was like, I can ignore this. I can't ignore it for 20 minutes, can I? Cat. Now, what I was saying, you throw my Sunset Overdrive. I assume you've downloaded it. Games with Gold.
I've started it downloading. I paused it because I don't have very good broadband, so if that's downloading, it takes quite a while.
Well, that game is fan-goddantastic. It's a cross, essentially, between, you know, Insomniac's previous work and something like Jet Set Radio, which, as you know, I absolutely love. Again, the comedy, bit hit and miss sometimes, but it is genuinely funny in parts. The death animations, or the... What would you call them when you come back to life, I suppose? It's not the death animations, it's the...
Oh, like a spawn animation.
Spawn animations, thank you very much. The spawn animations are just the best. And I love the tone, I love the look of that game. And again, it's just, it's so light-hearted and so, like, arcadey. It's kind of like an arcade game, like, written
large. You get a bunch of zombies because an energy drink is doing it.
Yeah. And again, this game is based so... Like, the two things which are this game, as much as it is, like, the visuals and stuff, it's the weapons, again, which are so imaginative and so fantastic, and the traversal. Like, you play that game and you just never... once you get good at it, you just never touch the ground. And you're just shooting everything as you go. I can't... like, that game is one of my favourite games of the generation so far. And if you have an Xbox One, I assume you've already downloaded it. But, yeah, really give that game a go, because it's absolutely fantastic and totally worth it. And shows what Insomniac obviously can do. Especially this speciality seems to be weapons. Sorry, the cat is just sitting next to the microphone now, purring. So I'm not sure if you can hear the purring through the microphone, but if you can, I do apologise.
It might just be soothing for the listeners.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe they'll just fall asleep. Or maybe they'll just do that at the sound of my voice. Who knows? What else is there? Oh, one other thing I wanted to mention. Oh, sorry, was there anything else you played this week?
No, not really.
Well, the big one for me, I mean, other than a quick go on Battlefront... was just because, you know, new DLC and stuff, and just
I am going to be getting back into Battlefront hopefully this weekend. I downloaded a 9 gig patch.
Yeah, it's a beast, isn't it?
But I'll me and some friends can play.
But I reviewed for the website brashgames.co.uk, please check it out, Killer Instinct Season 3. And I already had Killer Instinct Seasons 1 and 2, but that game just keeps getting better and goddamn better. Like, when that game came out, I remember I got it for free with a console because I had, like, I don't know, a certain gamer score or whatever.
And, I remember that.
It was a really good game, relatively content light, but it has just grown and grown and grown to the point now where it's one of the best fighters on the market, without question, and arguably one of the best first-party titles. And they just keep incorporating these characters so well. They all just seem to work. Like, in the latest one, there are two older characters who obviously work relatively well because, you know, they've always existed within the Killer Instinct universe. But then there was, what's the name? Is it Brash from Battletoads? And
Rash and, yeah.
Or Rash or whatever.
Rash. Because it's Rash, Pimples, Zits, and...
That's it, yeah, sorry.
I think that's it.
And the Arbiter from Halo.
Oh, wow.
Both of them in the game not only looked the part, even Rash to a certain degree, but every character in that game, it's a great balance between the combo system is relatively universal. So if you know the combos, you know, vaguely, there are differences, but if you know the combos for one character, you can essentially apply it across the board. But then each character on top of that has such an individual move set. And the roster now is, you know, pretty sizable. And every character feels so different, and they all work incredibly well. And I don't that game just keeps getting better and better the more and more I play it. And it's just, if you're looking for a fighter and, you know, you're disappointed by the lack of content in something like you know, Street Fighter V, at this point, you know, whether it be multiplayer or single player, Killer Instinct is both a fantastic fighter and you know, it's just absolutely chock-a-block with content. And it's
I'm glad you found something to scratch that itch, because when you were so disappointed with Street Fighter, it's good to see that you've got something that'll maybe tide you over until more content comes.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, because I don't like playing online all that often because I get too stressed out and I don't like losing. But it's like Killer Instinct. It's got, like, you know, obviously there's, like, the story's bullshit, but there's a story to complete for every character. And
that's a fighting game.
Yeah, and there are three endings... you know, all which are outlined. It's like, you know, complete the game while doing this and you'll get this badge and stuff, and it's just something to kind of keep you ticking along. And it's one of those games as well, because it's quite different, like the combo system's quite unique, like, oh my god, it's just going to be hard to get back into. The training mode, the dojo, is absolutely fantastic and puts you in such, you know, good, you know, again, I haven't played it yet, but one of the things I've heard the complaints about Street Fighter V is that the training mode is absolutely useless. Here it's absolutely brilliant, and that game still looks really good. And I was actually going to go into kind of a subject of the week. Is that what we call it? A talking point of the week? Do we?
Yeah, talking point.
But we're actually...
Where we both put on, like, turtlenecks and smoke pipes.
Yeah. I'm actually already doing that. I do that all the time. Like, I'm just constantly wearing a turtleneck and smoking a pipe. I just think it looks best. I mean, it's a bubble pipe, but you know, you're getting the visual effect, which I think is
yeah, great. Yeah.
But yeah, we've already gone over an hour, so we can probably save that for next week.
That's cool.
But essentially, what we're going to talk about are the best sound bites in video games. So that's something, you know, if you're thinking about listening next week, that's a pretty good reason. Essentially, the reason I wanted to do that was because of Killer Instinct. Because I still think that, you know, when you're at the end of a fight, and if you do pull off an ultra combo, and the commentator comes, ultra combo! As you're, and there's something about that game, like, when you put in an ultra, I'm not sure, you know, if you're aware of what an ultra combo is, you know, you put together a combo, and then if the energy is low enough, you only have to do a relatively simple move, and it goes into an automatic ultra combo where the computer takes over,
finishes it for
but,
you.
Yeah, where it turns into this huge 30-hit combo. But as you're hitting the character, the music all seems to sync in with the hits.
On top of
that, you've got the commentator going fucking bonkers, and the levels essentially explode in the background. And I was just like, fuck, I feel awesome. And if you do play that online and you get that finish on someone, it's just one of those absolutely great feelings where everything just falls in line. Another thing about those games, just sound design, absolutely spectacular. But again, we'll go into that next week. It'll give people a reason to come back. But,
yeah, if anyone has any favourites that they want to maybe write in with,
yeah.
And we can discuss them on the show.
Yeah, just give people a few.
You can find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Yes, you can.
And just send us links in there.
Yeah, and you know, please check out the website www.brashgames.co.uk. And again, just give you some idea. I mean, obviously that's Killer Instinct, but I mean, one of the most famous ones, Metal Gear Solid, Snake! You know,
yeah.
These are the kind of things we're thinking of, or classic 80s sound bites, you know, or Street Fighter, the fact that you can hear a single sound immediately, like, oh, I know what that game is, you know, just from the sound.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you have any, please write them to us. I can't speak now, it's the end of the podcast. But, yeah, if you have any questions, send them to us. We will read them out.
Yeah, we'd really like to have a mailbag.
Yeah, yeah, we need to get that sorted. So please send us messages and all that jazz. I know it's hard, people have time and stuff, but you know, if nothing else, download the episodes, go to iTunes, go to Android, all that jazz. Download, subscribe, please, whatever. But yeah. But yeah, we'll be back next week. And as always, thanks for listening.
Yes, thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.